Welcome to Gallifrey Public Radio, where we discuss everything in the Hooniverse. Join us each week as we bring you news, rumor, and recap. And now your hosts, Jay Witten. You win this one, Internets! And Melissa Mazza.
We were playing fast and loose with the term.
Spoilers.
We will be discussing episodes that have already aired, as well as news that's public knowledge. But don't worry, if we get into anything too serious, we'll warn you again. Have something you want to say? You can email us at gallifreypublicradio@gmail.com. You can also follow us on Twitter at @gallifreyradio or leave a comment on each episode at gallifreypublicradio.podbean.com. The wait is finally over. Doctor Who is back on TV and we discuss Moffat's first offering, Asylum of the Daleks.
Hello, and welcome to the Gallifrey Public Radio podcast. I am Melissa, here tonight with Jay. How are you, Jay?
I'm doing pretty good. How about yourself?
I'm good. I think we're both good now that we finally have some real Doctor Who content.
Because, oh, you have no idea.
Yes, we have been waiting so long and talking about it just constantly. So, finally, we are here with Asylum of the Daleks, and I thought this was an amazing episode. So, this is what we're going to talk about this podcast. So if someone is listening and they have not seen the episode, turn this off right now, because we're going to try to go into every little detail of it.
Oh, yeah, we will pick this apart. So, if you don't know what's coming, then, yeah, it's, you know, spoilers. Well, before we get to end of the episode, there were a couple things that happened this week that we need to touch on.
Sure.
Yeah. There was one thing Matt Smith in an interview had said, let me see what the quote is exactly here, said, I can't play the Doctor for much longer. Apparently, the role is very demanding, and it's taking a lot out of him. He says he's got problems with insomnia, and you know, he's trying to memorize lines till early hours in the morning. And so he said that he's, I mean, as far as we know, what he said about staying on until 2014 is still valid, but he's saying he doesn't know if he can go beyond that. Not because he doesn't want to, just because he's not sure if he can physically do it.
Yeah, I mean, that's completely understandable. I actually have not heard that news, though, so that's I'm hearing this for the first time. But I think just as an actor, lots of roles take it out of you, and I'm sure this is the most demanding, the Doctor. Like, that's just crazy to even think about. But still, like, going till 2014, in a sense, 2014 is right around the corner, but in another sense, all right, we'll have plenty of more time with the 11th Doctor, and, you know, it's probably going to be even longer than we had with David Tennant and some other incarnations, you know. So I think this is Matt Smith so far has had a good run, and I think, you know, another couple of years will be just perfect for his tenure.
Exactly. Yeah, I think they'll be able to explore everything they want to with the 11th Doctor in that time. So, you know, it's sad in a way, but at the same time, you know, this is what keeps the show going. This is what keeps it fresh and new. So, you know, I think I'm just going to enjoy the time that we've got with him left and not worry too much about when he's going to be leaving.
What do you think of the rumors that a female Doctor is going to be the next regeneration?
Okay, let me preface this by saying this is my own personal opinion. I don't stand for anyone or anything in this. I would have a hard time with it. I'm not saying that they shouldn't. I'm not saying that it's a bad idea. I personally would have a difficult time with it. I think that it would open up all kinds of interesting stories. I think it would be fantastic in that aspect. I just, you know, if they haven't done it by now, I don't think that they should.
I concur. I know you thought, as a woman, I would say, you know, I got that. But, no, I completely agree, because from everything that for the last 50 years, the Doctor, he began as a grandfather, like, you know, we know that he's married, he says that in this episode, so to reverse the gender just kind of takes something of those relationships out of it, and I don't like that, so it wouldn't sit well with me either, but it's concerning me because I think both Stephen Moffat and Matt Smith have said that it's like an inevitability that eventually he'll be female.
I mean, okay, having the Doctor be played by a black actor, brilliant. I think that'd be awesome. You know, I mean, it's there's not a big deal there for me. Having him change genders, that's a bit much. I mean, like I said, you know, it would open up all kinds of crazy stories, possibilities, but I don't know. I feel like the show has been going on for too long now. The character is way too well established to go and throw such a big curveball into the mix and expect it to stick.
Yeah, I agree.
Neil Gaiman actually won a Hugo Award for The Doctor's Wife.
Yes.
Which I think is well-deserved. I mean, it was fantastic. So I can't think of anything else that should have gotten that award, even outside of Doctor Who. Yeah, for sure.
And now everything's like Hugo winner Neil Gaiman. But I believe it has been confirmed that he's going to be writing for this current season. So I'm looking forward to that.
Yeah, he did confirm that he is writing a Doctor Who episode right now. He is on the third draft, I think he said.
Yes. Oh, wait, I have it here. This is the quote. Only a fool or a madman would try to do it again. So I'm on the third draft.
Yeah. The little bit that I've heard is that it could possibly be pushed back to next season, simply for budgetary constraints, because the Doctor's Wife was originally supposed to be part of the fifth series, and because of budget, because it was an expensive episode, they pushed it back to series six instead, and it looks like this one is going to be an expensive episode as well, so we'll see what happens.
Yeah, but, I mean, at least we know that it's a sure thing. I'm willing to wait till series seven.
Oh yeah,
or series eight, I guess.
Yeah, and you know, if one thing has been shown to me this week, it is that waiting for Doctor Who is always, always worth it.
Indeed.
Well, did you have anything else?
I think that's pretty much it for news, so I think we should move on to the episode, Asylum of the Daleks.
Yeah. All right, so the episode starts out with Amy doing a modeling shoot. I know you'd made reference to the love and hate that were painted on her hands.
Yeah, so anyone who knows me knows that I'm obsessed with the show Lost. That is my first love in TV. And in season one of Lost, character Charlie writes on it. He doesn't write it right on the knuckles, but on tape around his hands. It says love and hate, and then he changes the hate to fate. And I, you know, I'm just wondering, like, I'm still not entirely convinced that that's a Lost reference, but I think because there's so much crossover of the fandom, I like to think that they threw that in for us.
Right, just a little tip of the hat.
Yeah, exactly. I know that they have used that kind of thing other places, but again, I think just because there's so many Whovians who loved Lost, I just kind of wonder if they threw that in for us.
Yeah. Yeah, and then you know, if you hadn't been following Pond Life, if you didn't see, I mean, tell me that wasn't just like a crushing blow on Friday, watching, you know, the fifth episode of Pond Life.
Yeah. I it was a crushing blow, but it also kind of seemed like maybe it was just one fight it didn't seem that final until I watched Asylum of the Daleks. Like, oh my God, they're not married.
Yeah. You know, and then they're, you know, Rory shows up with divorce papers, and you're like, whoa, wait a minute, what the heck happened? You know, I mean, you go from, you know, the wedding of River Song to this, and you're just, where did it go? And I felt bad, because on last week's podcast, you know, we were talking about the one episode, the Dream Lord or something, I forget what it, or Amy's Choice, and I had said, I was like, you know, after this episode, you don't have to worry about their relationship anymore. Their relationship is fine. And then, you know, 2 days after I said that, this comes out on Pond Life. I was like, wow, I really stuck to it.
That, you know what, honestly, I recalled you saying that when I was but it was like, but that was how I think of them too. Like, you know, they're so solid. And obviously, like, they confirmed they are solid, and it was just a silly reason that they broke up. But, like, it made you consider it for a little while that they were really, you know, because it does happen.
Yeah, yeah. So, what did you think about the Dalek people?
So before this episode, they had said that this was going to be something that made the Dalek scary again. Mm-hmm. And I think that this is what the powers that be were referring to. And I I think they succeeded. They made the Daleks scary again. And you can't get rid of the Daleks. Like, they're just such an integral part of this show. Like, they have to be on it. So it is cool if they reinvent it. And, like they say, it's a whole new dimension to it. Like, they're always doing these things where, like, something that beholds an angel becomes an angel or whatever. So, like, suddenly Amy's an angel. And then, like, now in this one, like, there's nanogen, so suddenly Amy's a Dalek.
Yeah.
but it is a way of keeping it fresh. And so that's what I have to say about the Dalek people. What about you?
Yeah, I don't know. It kind of caught me off guard. I wasn't expecting it. And it was just like, really? That's, I don't know. It was hard for me to accept at first. It seemed very plot device when it first happened, but I guess as the episode went on, I got used to it, and it was like, okay, they started explaining it a little bit more. I'm like, okay, it's starting to make more sense, you know, undercover Daleks, that makes sense, you know, but I have to agree with you, though, that this episode really did make the Daleks scary again, you know, and there was one reference, or what, I was watching it with my son the other day, and, you know, I know I'm jumping ahead here, but towards the end, when he's in the intensive care unit and the Daleks all recognize him, you know, the doctor gets scared. You know, and my son pointed that out. He's like, you know, that's the first time you ever see him get scared of the Daleks. And I'm like, you know what? He's right. I mean, you can tell before that he's unnerved by it and he's not happy about it. And he might be scared, but you can't see the fear in him. This is the first time that you actually see the doctor start freaking out. And I was like, oh my God.
Yeah, this is when he's, like, pushed up against the door saying, like, Osmond, please open the door, right? That, yeah, definitely. I noticed that, too. I want to go way back, though. Oh, well, no, wait, I have another thing to say about them. What about, I think that this is kind of a throwback to the Ninth Doctor days with Captain Jack Harkness and his nanogens that...
Yeah.
It's exactly the same kind of technology that they somehow in the episode in series one, this was the nanogens recreate this kid with a gas mask because they think that that's what their pattern right, that they're working
the only,
off.
That's the only template that they know of.
Right. So I think that this is very much the same thing, that they have this kind of technology that is making off the Dalek template on a person. So I like the kind of throwback to that.
Yeah, that was pretty cool. And I was started thinking about it, and I was like, you know, the Empty Child and the Doctor dances were Moffat episodes, so it makes sense that he would use nanogens. He's the one that, you know, as far as I'm aware, came up with them. So.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Right. One thing I noticed, though, when they you always hear Rory referred to as Mr. Pond. Mm-hmm. Yeah, they always do. But I noticed on when Amy signs the divorce papers, she actually writes Amy Williams. I was like, okay, so we see a little bit more into it that, you know, she actually did take his name. They joke around about it and say that Rory took the last name, but she actually did. So that... I mean, that just kind of shows the kind of relationship that they have, that he's secure enough to say, okay, I'm going to let people make fun of it, but, you know, I know who's in charge.
Yeah, that's definitely kind of a little part of Rory's personality, that strong core that we don't know about. Like, I noticed they definitely pointed out that she signed it, Mrs. Williams. You know, like, the cinematography was making a point of that.
Yeah.
But later on, the Doctor does call him Mr. Pond.
Yeah.
So we go right back to that kind of thing.
Yeah. I love the line when Rory wakes up in the cell and, you know, he's like, how much trouble are we in? And the doctor comes in, out of 10, 11. Yeah. That was like a nice little nod to the 11th doctor there.
Yeah, and how have they not used that line before?
Like, exactly. I'm like, how do you, you know, you've got the 11th doctor, turn it up to 11, you know?
Yeah, that's what I'm waiting for.
But, yeah, it was, I mean, this whole episode was filled with things like that, you know, with lines that were completely awesome.
Yeah, just the script in general was like, it was like fast-paced, witty, I liked it very much.
Yeah, it reminded me a lot of the old Stephen Moffat before he became a showrunner. You know, that, you know, it was, you were waiting for the penny to drop. You know, you knew you had so much fun coming and everything. It was just, it reminded me of Moffat before he became the showrunner, and I love that.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, because I was always thinking back to things like Silence in the Library and stuff, things that didn't have an immediate parallel with this episode, but like a little moment would remind me of that. So I can see that. This is definitely like Moffat doing his thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I love the Doctor's face when the, you know, after he stands there and says, you know, all right, you got me. It's Christmas. You know, he's waiting to get shot. And then the shot doesn't come, and he kind of squints out of his eye.
Yeah. They did not spend enough time in that scene. Like, for everything that was built up with this, like, the only pictures that were released were of this scene. Like, I thought that was going to be, like, half the movie taking place, and half the episode taking place in this set with all these, all the different incarnations of the Daleks over the years.
Yeah, exactly. It did kind of blow through real quick. You know, and I remember seeing the pictures, you know, the internet was blowing up. There was, you know, you could see the Doctor, you could see Amy, you could see Rory, and you could see another female with red hair. And the internet was blowing up like, oh my God, who is this? And she wound up being like, you know, a partial throwaway character.
Well, okay, so let's talk about this lady, because I didn't know that about the internet blowing up, and I was seeing her red hair thinking, oh God, is she related to Amy's? Okay, so this person at the beginning is our first, like, the Dalek person hybrid thing. Mm-hmm. There was actually, I'm not sure if you saw this, a prequel to this that was released on iTunes, but, like, to, like, a very select audience for, like, reasons no one knows. Like, they just accidentally released it to certain people and not others. But in the prequel, you know, they talk about, like, dreaming up realities and stuff. Like, it very much sets up the episode, so I'm glad I didn't see it till after I had actually seen it, because it was more of a surprise. But now I forget where I was going with this.
the Dalek lady.
Oh yeah, so they tease, they kind of, the whole, I'm not, did you see this prequel?
No, I haven't seen it.
Alright, sorry to spring it on you. But they're, like, teasing that this person wants to speak to him, and, like, it's, like, the biggest deal and stuff, and it turns out to be this woman. So, I could see if you hadn't seen that, like, I saw the episode and then I saw the prequel, but if you had seen the prequel, I could see you thinking, too, that the whole episode was going to be about her. Mm-hmm. And so my other thing that I have to say about that is, I was wondering, and I'm almost still wondering, she keeps talking about her daughter, her daughter Hannah. Did you get the sense that maybe that was who Oswin was? And I know we'll get into a lot of who Oswin is, but, like, at the beginning, like, did you start to kind of think that, or was that just me, that was her daughter?
No, I didn't put too much into it. I was too hung up on the, you know, the Dalek Parliament and things like that I was like, okay, this woman isn't important, moving on, you know, I dropped it. You know, I didn't I really didn't put that much effort into her. That might be why I feel like she's a throwaway character.
Mm-hmm. But she probably is. I think, like, it was probably red herring, and you know.
Yeah. So, I love the Doctor Who logo made of you know, the Dalekanium.
Oh yeah, that was scary.
I was like, oh, that was awesome.
I'm like, what are they gonna do to him?
Yeah, and then after that, we see the. Was it right after that we see first meet Oswin? When she's in the it was Oswin's opening monologue, basically.
Okay, did that come right after a commercial? I don't remember.
It was right after the logo or the mm-hmm. theme.
Mm-hmm. Oh, so, yeah.
And there were a couple things in there, like, when she's nailing up the boards and she makes a comment about how they always come at night. Mm-hmm. It's like, I wanted something to come from that. I was like, okay, they always come at night. That's got to be something. You know, it's the first thing that you really get from this woman, and they never said anything about it. You know, which later on I think kind of it made sense in context of what was actually going on, but they never really made reference to it again.
Yeah, I could see definitely getting hung up on wondering what that was going to mean. There's a lot of these little clues when you rewatch it that, you know, it's creepy.
Yeah. You know, and then when she starts hearing the Daleks outside, she cranks up the music. And I definitely think that was, you know, you have to take that in the abstract of what was going on, that, you know, the music is her mental barrier against the Daleks kind of thing.
Yeah. And the music is the Habanero from Carmen, a song that I happen to love. I believe it's Maria Callas because I have that version, and I love that the doctor mentions that he was playing the triangle.
Yeah, it's me on the triangle. It was great. No, I love when they come back and the doctor's kind of pacing, and Rory asks what he's doing, and Amy's. The line here is, he's chosen the most defendable area in the room, counted all the Daleks, counted all the exits. And now he's counting the exact distance we're standing apart and starting to worry. Oh, look, look at him frowning now. Something's wrong with Amy and Rory, and who's going to fix it? And he straightens his bow tie. And I love that, you know, they showed, okay, Amy's got him pegged. She knows him. These two have spent so much time together that she can figure him out like that. And I love that.
I love that, too. That's like the part that must have been such a fun little monologue to do.
Yeah, exactly. Let's see, what's...
This is, and then right after this is when we get the line from Rory of what color.
Yeah, exactly. Well, all the questions were taken. Actually, I wanted to... I've got the line here I wanted to talk about. When the doctor asks why they didn't have destroyed the planet, or they ask him if he'd ever heard about the asylum, and he says, yeah, I've heard the myth, whatever. And he says, it never made any sense to me because you just killed him. And then the Dalek says, it's offensive to us to exterminate such divine hatred. Offensive? Does it surprise you that Daleks have a concept of beauty? And the doctor, I mean, Matt Smith just nails it right here. You know, he gets the look on his face, and he says, I thought you'd run out of ways to make me sick. But hello again, you think hatred is beautiful. And he turns to walk off, and you hear the Dalek behind him say, perhaps that is why we've never been able to kill you. I was like, oh, that just, you know, I mean, that had to be such a slap upside the head.
And then, honestly, that's like a good explanation for why they've never been able to kill. Like, you'd think that he would have annihilated them long ago. Like, and that's just such a profound, simple, succinct way of putting it.
Yeah. It's like, you know, yes, we hate you. We think you deserve to die. But at the same time, you know, we can't bring ourselves to do it because you're freaking awesome. let's see. Okay, there's... I've got a couple nitpicks in this episode here, and this was one of them. Is, all right, when... After Amy's being turned into the after Amy is being affected by the Daleks, or by the nanogens, getting turned into a Dalek, you know, she says something about being scared, and the doctor says, scared's good, hold on to scared. Scared isn't Dalek, but... During this whole thing, he's talking about the asylum, and the thing he says is, you know, it's like a small, you know, strike force could penetrate the shield, go down, destroy it, but you're all too scared to go, aren't you? And I was like, wait a minute, I thought you said scared wasn't Dalek.
Yeah, they've, if any emotion has ever been shown by Daleks, it's fear. They've shown this in many episodes. I wonder if that was on purpose.
My wife brought it up. She was like, you know, do you think that, you know, when the doctor was telling Amy what was going on, she was like, do you think that he, you know, has actually had that conversation with her four times, or is he just saying that to freak her out so that he can, you know, put them in the situation so she and Rory can fix it later on, you know? I was like, yeah, I don't think so, because at that point, they didn't know where Rory was. You know, he was still trying to find Rory. He was, I think that was, that'd be giving him a little bit too much credit because he was still figuring out what was going on.
I don't know. I might have to rewatch it from that kind of, because he's always a couple steps ahead of everybody. Maybe he put the plan in action that early.
And it's very possible. I'm not saying it's not, but it seemed kind of a little bit too much for me. But who knows? It could have been. I like, you know, is it bad to say that I really miss this?
Yeah, that was one of those things that was in the trailer that had me on the edge of my seat going, no, like, I missed this too.
Exactly. That's what I said. When it happened on the show, I was like, that's exactly how I feel. Oh, so I like the fact that Amy figured out about the zombie Daleks before the Doctor did. You know, he's so far ahead figuring it all out that he forgot, okay, there's four people in here that I just said could be reanimated. He's saying, you know, the nanogens attack anything living or dead. And then he keeps going with that thought process, and he's like, wait a minute, anything dead? Did you say anything dead?
Yeah, and again, this was another way that they made the dogs scary. This was a pretty scary part. But I was more concerned because she was saying living or dead. Like, now I'm like, oh my god, what's going to happen to Amy? Like, and also, looking back, that's kind of a clue as to what, the whole thing about Osmond. You know, like, living or dead, like, they could do this to living people as well as dead people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. All right, so let's go ahead and jump into Osmond here, because it's kind of hard to talk about the episode without bringing that up.
Talk around her.
Yeah. I for one, was caught completely off guard by seeing Jenna Louise Coleman in this. I did not expect it at all.
You know. A total coup by the show runner. The whole crew that kept this secret, hats off, bravo. Like, because I'm sitting there watching it, like, that's Jenna Louise Coleman. But, like, what's going on? Like, completely taken by surprise. Like, they caught us off guard, and God bless every single person who kept that secret.
Yeah, because that was brilliant, just having that sprung on me instead of, oh, she makes a cameo in the first episode of the season. No, I mean, it's just you come across it like, wait a minute, I'm not supposed to see her till Christmas. What's going on? Yeah, but I fell in love with her. The first few minutes that she's on screen, I'm like, okay, I'm going to like this girl. I can tell. She's awesome, you know.
Honestly, I think she stole the show, like, this episode. It must be really hard to introduce a new companion or whatever. And I really liked her in this. I have no bad things to say.
Exactly. I think that, the big question now is, okay, how is she going to come back as the companion? You know, there's, you know, all kinds of different thought processes. You know, obviously the easy way to do it is it's her ancestor, you know, her great-great-grandmother rescued from the 21st century or something.
Gwyneth... whatever, from Torchwood, is the descendant of the chick that was in the Dickens episode.
Mm-hmm.
When they
tie them together like that, it's like, you know, use the same actress, but, oh, yeah, it's a distant relative or something, you know, Martha and her friend or cousin that worked at Torchwood, you know.
Right.
So that would be the obvious, easy way to do it. I'm not ruling it out. You know, there would be the possibility of the Doctor goes and rescues Osmond before that happens, but then you have to ask, what happens to this story? What happens to this time? How does it get rewritten? You know,
right, so I think that's the other possibility, but I find it's too River Song. They've already done this storyline, mm-hmm. you know?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I wouldn't... This is Moffat, you know, so it's up in the air. I don't know which way to go with it, so I'm interested to see what happens, and I'm wondering if we're going to get any clues before then.
Someone brought up a possibility that I think is just terrifying, and I hope this is not the case, but what if she's not the new companion, and that everything was thrown out as a red herring, that, you know, all the publicity photos of her and stuff, and it was just, like, you know, she's just in this episode, and maybe, like, guesting on a couple of other episodes or whatever, but, like, there's going to be a completely different companion that they haven't even told us about. If they could hide that, like, her being in this episode, like, what else are they hiding?
Yeah, but that's her making an appearance in an episode is a little bit different than, you know, faking an entire season's worth of production photos just to, you know, carry over a practical joke. Is it possible? Yeah, I can't say that it's not, but that's I can't get there from here.
once again, I'm coming from a background of being obsessed with Lost. And
well, yeah.
They literally had people on the set, like, wearing wedding dresses who, like, weren't involved with it at all, just to throw people off. So I wouldn't put it past BBC with their, you know. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah. I hope that's not the case, because I really like Jenna Louise Coleman in this episode. I mean, she was fantastic, and I can't wait to see more. So if they do that, that would be the ultimate betrayal.
Not the ultimate betrayal, but I'm just staying open to that possibility. Like, that is the betrayal.
With my emotions in the state they are right now, it's the ultimate betrayal, okay? I'll recant later on, but
that's
let me
true.
Have it.
This is all Stephen Moffat's fault.
Exactly.
But what I was going to say is, have you seen, so for the, they did the premiere a week in advance. They did one in London and one in New York, which unfortunately I didn't get tickets to. But there was a Q&A at the end, and it is available online. Did you see this Q&A by any chance?
I have not. I haven't had the chance to check it out yet.
Okay, so you need to go see this, because Carolyn Skinner talked a lot about this, and I feel like this is kind of spoilery, but, like, it's not. It's out there, so I'm just, like...
So this is your warning.
She said that... Yeah. So go for it. She said that, like, Stephen Moffat got this look of, like, whatever. Again, I'm paraphrasing, so you need to look at it yourself. But, basically, it was his idea to throw Jenna Louise Coleman into this episode. And the way that she talks about it is, the way that Carol Skinner talks about it is like, oh my god, this crazy thing where they're going to take this girl that's going to play the companion and just have her randomly in the episode. So, like, I don't have a transcript or anything of what she said, but I got the impression that they're never going to bring it up again. That Oswin and the new companion, I believe her name is Clara, are just two completely different people and they're never going to talk about it again. And
they can't do that. I mean, that's with the impression that she made in this episode. I mean, at the very end, you know, when she's telling the doctor to run, you know, I mean, her line is, you know, run, clever boy. And then she looks dead at the camera and says, and remember. I'm like, you can't say that and then never plan on explaining it again. Yeah.
All right, so what if they made... So I think now I foresee that they aren't going to talk about it again, that she is going to come on as the companion and be completely unknown, like, playing a different character, and then somehow, maybe a whole season from now, it's all going to tie together and they are going to be the same.
Oh, so very much like the way that he's been running the past two seasons.
Yeah, now that we've kind of worked it out, I think that might be where it's going.
Oh, that is going to infuriate me. I can see that happening, and it had better be awesome when he ties it all together, but, oh, that would just drive me up the wall. But,
not saying it's gonna happen, but.
Yeah. Alright, well, there were a few, different things foreshadowing, the fate of Oswin in this that, you know, going back and watching it a second time, I was able to pick up on a couple more, but, They weren't really hiding it. They were kind of hiding in plain sight what was going on.
Mm-hmm.
One, like I said, when she hears the Daleks and cranks up the music, that might be foreshadowing. I don't know. It might be that she actually hears the Daleks outside in the ICU. You know, but in my mind, it was like, okay, that's the Daleks trying to take over her mind and her working to, you know, to keep them out.
Yeah. I kind of was thinking the other way, that she's just hearing the dogs from the ICU, like, because this is around the time when she says they always come at night. Mm-hmm. And I think, like, you know, in hospitals, that's kind of, yeah.
Yeah, and, I don't know, I mean, I think the they always come at night kind of thing is that, you know, the boards up there are her building a barrier against the Daleks trying to get into her mind. That's, and this is my interpretation. And, you know, so... them coming at night, she's sleeping, she's not able to actively keep the dream going to, you know, fight them off. So that's when her defenses start to get broken down. And she has to rebuild her defenses every morning when she wakes up.
Yeah, I could see that too. It's definitely, it's very literal, the symbolism here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, she's boarding herself up, and like you said, like with the music, it's like she's drowning out what they're saying.
So... Yeah, and then we get a couple more quite obvious foreshadowing. You know, the fact that she's able to hack the cameras. The doctor says repeatedly, you know, you shouldn't be able to do that. There's no way you can do that. You know, and she's like, oh, you know, I'm very smart. You know, and you buy it at first. You know, you're like, okay, she's pretty awesome. I can understand that she'd be able. The viewport from her shuttle, you know, is clearly a Dalek eye.
Yeah, that was a big tell that I did not notice at first.
I mean, when you go back and you see it again, you're like, oh, how did I miss that? You know, it's you don't want to recognize it. That's kind of the part of it.
Yeah.
You know, and then the doctor making reference to her, you know, where'd you get the milk for the souffles?
There's actually, so I wrote the quote down. The first time he brings this up, he says, where do you get the milk? The dog says, this conversation is irrelevant. And he says, no, it isn't.
Yeah.
And you think it's just a silly thing, and then exactly. You're like, no, it wasn't irrelevant. Like, that the whole thing hinges on it.
And then when they're on the teleporter, you know, he says, no, where do you get the milk? Seriously, does this not bother anyone else? You know, and Matt Smith does it, you know, he says it in that playful voice of his that you're like, okay, he's just hung up on something that really doesn't matter. You know, and then he tells her again when he finally finds her, you know, he's like, think, Oswin, think about the souffles. Where would you have gotten the milk from? You know, and that's when she finally starts to realize, you know, and so it's a nice way of tying that all through the episode, you know. But then, you know, the last thing is the when she says that she hacked into the path web, and the doctor's like, I've tried. You can't. You know, and this is right before he gets into the room and finds her. It's the last little bit of, you know, here's your last clue before we beat you over the head with the answer, you know?
Right.
So, I mean, it was throughout the whole episode, you know, they're dropping hints. They're not telling you what to look for. They're not, you know, they're not very blunt about it. It's just kind of like, here, I'm going to drop this here, and whoever picks it up, good on you. You know what's coming, you know.
Right.
So I love the way that they did the foreshadowing in this one.
Yeah, there were even, like, subtle ones. She, like, the doctor, there's something, like, where she says, like, do you recognize any of them? And he said, yeah, all of them. And she says, yeah, how? And it's just, like, she's so interested in his relationship with the Daleks. Like, what does she care? And, you know, if you think she's a Dalek, it makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, yeah. But, yeah, I think, I mean, just that the end of that, I mean, it was classic Moffat with the twist at the end and, you know, the fact that she was able to erase the doctor from the Dalek's memory banks. I was like, that was awesome. I mean,
yeah, so what do you think is going to happen? Do you think forever on they're not going to remember him or will they?
I think they're going to be able to say from this, you know, they're going to be able to use this to go either way they want to at any given point, because you got to think, she erased the doctor, so from this point on, chronologically, from the, you know, whatever point in history this is, whatever year it is, forward, the Daleks won't know him. But before this, they will still know him. So they'll be able to play with it and say, okay, in this episode, the Daleks have no clue. It's just the doctor, you know, getting one up on him again. In this one, they know who he is, and they're gunning for him. You know, so it's they'll be able to tailor the Daleks to any situation they want now, and I think it was brilliant if they go that way.
Yeah, they wrote themselves a whole new storyline, and it's a way to make sense of past episodes, too, you know, if you wanted to go deeper into it. So, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I think it was it was awesome, and it was you know, just a cool way to like revive it and say, okay, now the, you know, if we bring the Daleks back, you know, it's not going to be the same thing. You know, it's not going to be the same storyline that you've seen, you know, every year since the show's inception. It's, you know, they can do new stuff now, and it's awesome. So, did you notice, and I mean, this kind of goes into the whole Rory is the master theory. Anytime you see Rory alone on screen, there are drums in the background. It's not the four-tap beat, but there are drums in the background anytime Rory is alone.
I did not notice that.
I at this point, I can't help but wonder. I'm like, okay, do they know the theory is around? Do they know that it's so popular? And are they just putting stuff like that in there to mess with us? because I can totally see them doing that.
Or not even realizing that they're doing that, and we're all just going crazy.
Exactly. Everyone's just picking up on the slightest things, like, oh my god!
Yeah. That would be awesome. I root for that theory, though. Now I kind of hope that it's true.
It would be kind of cool. I mean, in my ideal situation of that working out is in the Angels Take Manhattan, Rory figures out who he is, or something happens, you know, to reveal that.
Well, there's not enough room. Like, how many episodes could they really do that? Like, Angel Take Manhattan, he suddenly realizes, yeah.
And that could be how Rory leaves. They never said that Amy and Rory were going to be taken from the show in the same way. It could be Amy gets killed off, or, you know, however she's eradicated from the show, and then the Master vanishes to come back later on. You know, that...
Yeah, they could do that.
I mean, how many times have they brought him back from death? He's been incinerated. He's been, you know, shot and refused to regenerate. He's got sucked into the time lock. You know, it's like, he's come back so many different times. Like, you know, it wouldn't surprise me if they did that.
Yeah.
Let's see. I like that Rory got slapped twice in this episode.
My favorite Rory thing was, Rory, you found Rory. I call him Nina. It's a personal thing.
You know, just like, I'm just flirting to keep your spirits up. And then, you know, she doesn't say anything else. Anytime you want to start flirting again, fine with me.
Yeah, she goes silent. I thought that was really funny. And it was good to see Rory getting to flirt a little bit because Amy broke up with him.
Yeah.
At this point, they're still not together.
Mm-hmm. I think the Amy and Rory thing got resolved too quickly.
Something that I read online made, because I was thinking that too, and then I put it in perspective, and that was Stephen Moffat had said, told the writers that he wanted every one of the first five episodes to be like a movie in itself. Mm-hmm. And because you can't have a movie in a 43-minute or whatever it is, story, I think they just kind of compressed it. So I was thinking the same thing. They resolved that too quickly. They threw out a problem that wasn't really a problem, and, you know, it really didn't add anything to the story. But if you think of it like a movie that was kind of squished down into 43 minutes, maybe that makes it make more sense.
Yeah, I mean, I think that they could have kept it going through all five episodes. You know, have it be tension. Okay, there's this tension between them. They both, you know, reveal to the audience that they both want to resolve it, but neither one is, you know, willing to be the one to take the steps yet. You know, and then they're stuck together with the doctor. You know, Rory wants to be there to fix it with Amy. Amy's not going to leave the doctor's side. So, you know, they're both there. You know, and it causes this tension that you can have. And then, you know, as you go, you see, okay, they're starting to work through it. And then in the fifth episode, hey, they, you know, they've worked it out, they're back together, and then end it, you know?
Right.
And that would be very much in the theme of the, you know, New Who. You know, just let them have that one brief shining moment of victory and then rip it all away.
I hope that they don't do that, but like you said, that would be right in the vein of what they've been doing.
Yeah. I don't know, it felt like, you know, they built this up, and it was such a, you know, especially if you watched, you know, Pond Life, you had that whole, you know, depending on when you saw the episode, you know, 24 to, you know, 30 hours or something to just dread what was going on, you know. And then it's kind of like, okay, here it is, and all right, now it's resolved. Wait a minute, you know, I was invested in this. What did you think of the reasoning behind it?
Behind what? What do you mean?
The reasoning behind why they split, like how it was, you know,
you know what? Yeah, I mean, I think that actually could be a legit reason, and there's nothing wrong with that, but the way that it was so compressed and, like, all the emotions had to happen at once and be fully resolved within, like, 2 minutes, the acting, and it all felt rushed, and I didn't because I was sitting there watching thinking, like, stop complaining, Amy, like, he waited 2,000 years for, like, you know, like, I'm sorry, but I was 100% on Rory's side as she's talking, and then she starts to bring it up, exactly what I'm thinking, like, oh, and you think waiting 2,000 years is... And, like, I'm sorry she did not give that those lines enough pathos for me to be like, oh, yeah, you're right, like, that wasn't... 2,000 years wasn't worth your suffering. Not, like, no, I didn't buy that scene. I didn't like it. Like, and I really... Because I do buy the whole Amy and Rory thing. Like, I get that they're together by the end of the episode. I love that. Mm. But, like, but this scene in particular, like, yeah, no.
It was... I liked that Rory got to finally, you know, say... You know, this is what I did for you, and, you know, he never actually voiced it, but you could tell he's like, I waited 2,000 years for you, and you never even said thank you. You know, it was that kind of feeling from him, like, you know, look what I sacrificed. Clearly, I love you more. You know, for him to finally be able to say something like that, it made it worth it for me.
Yeah.
Yeah, because I've been waiting for him. He's always been the, you know, the doormat when it comes to Amy. You know, anytime she's around, he's like, you know, very cowled and yes, dear, and, you know, I'm doing this all for you and whatever. And for him to actually finally stand up to her and say, you know, acknowledge what I have done, you know, that it really made me feel good about it.
I agree. And again, with the acting, with the way that he, like, he starts to kind of broach the subject and he's like, well, we both know. And you're like, it just gets so awkward and painful for a second. And then he's like, F it, I'm just going to say it all. And he's like, I'm the one who always loved you more. Like, it's just like, you feel for Rory right there.
Yeah. Yeah, it was, had they given that more time, I think that could have been a very, very powerful scene. But like you said, it felt very rushed, and it robbed it of a lot of impact. It really did. If they had given it the time that it needed to actually flourish and become a meaningful scene, I don't think I would have felt so bad about it being, you know, about them resolving it in that episode. Had it been, you know, actually felt out all the way instead of, hey, we're going to have, you know, five lines each, and now, oh, we're back together. You know.
Right.
So.
I agree.
Yeah. Okay, let's see. Where are we at here? Yeah, I want to know who the heck it was that, you know, whose job it was to chain Oswin down. Or, you know,
oh, my
God. It's like, you had one job.
I have in my notes with a double exclamation point and a question mark, what was the point of the chains?
Exactly. It's like, yeah. Really? You know, I mean, she just... there wasn't even any straining either. She just rolled forward and the chains dropped off. I'm like, what the heck? It's like, here, we're going to lay these chains on you. You're stuck.
I mean, all right, so let's give them the benefit of the doubt. And maybe that is a really a deep thing, like that the only chains that she had were the chains of her own mind. And that kind of thing.
I don't know. That's getting a little bit too...
I'm trying here.
Don't be fair to the Daleks when they're going to shoot me at a planet. Oh, let's see. No, all right. I've got some nitpicks that I'm going to throw out here, and you know, I'm very much for not being nitpicky when it comes to Doctor Who, simply because it can rob you of a lot of enjoyment. But at the same time, there's things that you have to point out and say, really? And then move on. So I've got to point these out.
All right. What are they? Bring them on.
So I already said the whole thing about, you know, the, you know, hold on to scared. Scared isn't Dalek. And then, you know, the line he gave, like, you know, 5 minutes earlier. How is it that there are doors that open outwards? Like, I mean, regular doors that have no handles. How is a Dalek going to open that door? I mean,
I did not notice that.
That's the kind of stuff that runs through my head. There's one question I had that I've kind of answered myself is, you know, when Oswin's transmitting to him, when she's talking to him, how is it they hear Oswin's voice and not a Dalek voice?
Yeah, that was bothering me too, because by the end, she is speaking in a Dalek voice. Yeah.
The way I understand it is that she's, or the way I've kind of hand-waved it in my head at least, is that she's, you know, transmitting her, she's hacked the signal, so she's not actually vocally speaking. It's just a, you know, her mind going into the path web or whatever, and so she thinks, this is how I'm supposed to sound. And so automatically that's how she sounds. So it's not actually vocally speaking. It's more of a mental projection of her voice.
That makes a lot of sense. And I believe that she is on some level some kind of super hacker genius. Mm-hmm. So that some kind of explanation like that, I think, is exactly, yeah.
All right. And then my last one is okay, the missiles can't get through the shield, but the ship was able to. How is that? The ship is able to crash into the planet, but your missiles can't get through.
Oh, yeah.
And then,
Dalek technology is never up to par the way you think it should be.
But then, but their missiles are kick-ass, though. I mean, if they can make it through to the planet, it only takes 12 of them to blow up an entire planet. 12 missiles? Really? What kind of crap are you packing in there? I mean, there's nothing on the face of the Earth, nothing that man has come up with. Even strongest nuclear bomb, if you put 12 of them, that would not destroy the planet, would not blow it up completely. You might make it, incapable of being habitated, but you're not going to blow up the planet. I'm like, what the hell were they packing in those missiles? But anyway.
What bothers me is, why is their original planet suddenly, an asylum? And now they're afraid of their own kind,
I don't think that was actually Skaro. I think that was, she said something about the Dalek planet, and the Doctor said Skaro. She never actually said anything about it being Skaro. And we don't know where they're taken to. He's knocked out and wakes up on the ship, so...
Yeah, I mean, that's it. But again, in that, the prequel that you didn't see, this being that is delivering the message from this woman makes him, say the name, and he makes him, and he says, Skaro. They make it, as a whole big... Mm. So that was why I was thinking, that this has to be Skaro, and that it's, devolved from their home planet to their, just where they keep the crazy ones. Yeah.
Who knows? It might be. I don't know. I typically go with, if it wasn't on the show, I'm not considering it canon.
Yeah.
I mean, there's the radio dramas, the books, they can't keep the canon straight in the show, much less everything, the extended universe. So it's, I kind of try and give them a pass on it, on stuff like that. I loved at the end how, when the Daleks don't recognize him and they ask Doctor Who, and then they show him in the TARDIS, asking the question, and he did it exactly the same way that Doriam did at the end of The Wedding of River Song. So, it was the same way he asked it.
Yeah, definitely. You quoted that extensively last time, as that was the whole On the Fields of Trenzalore, The Fall of the 11th. I think he was deliberately mimicking, because he says it exactly the same way, Doctor Who,
yeah.
As he's twirling about the TARDIS.
Yeah, I mean, I think he did it, he definitely did it intentionally, but I loved how they tied this one in with the previous episode. And they're like, okay, we haven't forgotten that we asked that question, here's a little nod to it. Wait, it was a great way to tie those two episodes together.
Yes.
I love when the Doctor drops him off, and Rory kind of stands there waiting for permission to enter the house, and Amy says, "All right, come on," she jerks her head or whatever. He starts getting all happy and dancing, and you hear, "I can see you."
he gives a big yes.
Yeah. I mean, I was like, okay, these two are back. I love it.
Yeah, of course. I mean, they're not complete without the other, and I'm glad the pawns, the duo of them, they've worked well so far. Unless you have another note about that, I actually want to go back a little bit, because in my notes, I have everything that we just talked about down to the end of the episode, but I have a couple of things started off, and I realized that they completely connect. And so that was, at the very beginning of the episode, when they're first brought before the Parliament of the Daleks, Amy says, "What do we do?" And the Doctor says, "Make them remember you." And then at the end, what we were just talking about before is when Oswin looks right down the camera lens, like, mm-hmm. breaks that huge taboo of looking right into the camera and says, "Run, you clever boy, and remember." Mm-hmm. And I think that that whole, obviously, like, there's the connection between the remember. Because, like, when I took my notes, I put a star next to that whole thing, make them remember you, think this is going to be important. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't until later that I was like, eh, I put a star next to something else that said remember. I didn't at the time realize that they were connected by that word. And so they both were kind of portrayed as very important. So what do you think is going on there? Looking down the camera lens was just so, you don't do that unless it means something.
Yeah. I mean, to have her break the fourth wall like that is, you know, it's a very, you know, something is coming. There's going to, you know, like I said, they can't just drop it after such a deliberate, you know, deliberate statement to the audience. You know, so it's, something is coming. I don't know what, but, you know, it could simply be, you know, that they were saying it so that people who, you know, don't, you know, stalk the internet for any little bit of news, you know, will realize, holy crap, that's the same girl from the first episode when they reveal her as a companion. Mm-hmm. But I think that there's going to be more to that. I think that, you know, Moffat has fell into his groove and he realized, okay, I can do this. I'm going to come up with something completely awesome. So I have no idea what it is that's coming, but I know that this is going to be big.
Yeah. I agreed. I don't have any spoilers, so I don't really know what it means either. So I just hope, I know it's going to be big.
Mm-hmm. Like I said before, I think that, yeah, it was a long and, you know, horrible, horrible wait, but this was worth it. I mean, this episode was just so much fun and so exciting that, you know, if I can't imagine it starting the series out any better than this.
Yeah. Oh my God. For like a way to lead into this, it's just like it gave us a lot of information, but it also left us wanting more. Like, mm-hmm. Next week's episode just looks so fun. Like, I'm so glad it's back.
Yeah. I mean, I think next week's episode definitely looks like it's going to be a, you know, just a fun popcorn-style episode where it's just, you're going to sit down, you're going to have fun. It's not going to be a big carryover, but it's going to be a load of fun. You know, you're going to look back on it and say, I don't really remember much about this episode, but I know it was enjoyable.
Right.
So, I don't know if you noticed, though, they pointed out Rory's dad in the trailer. You know, he's in there.
Yeah, I had thought that he was going to be in Pond Life, and I just assumed his role was cut, and then they said this, and well, who's that? That's my dad, so I'm really looking forward to that.
Now, did you happen to recognize the actor?
I did not. Who is it?
Well, I don't know if you're a Potterhead or not, but he actually plays Arthur Weasley in the Harry Potter movies.
Oh, I am not. I did see the first movie, but not, you know, I don't know it well enough.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, he's now joined a huge list of actors that have starred in both the Harry Potter movies and in Doctor Who. So, and there was also another actor in there that played the Mr. Filch in Harry Potter too. So it's, you know, like I said before, you know, it's, England has, you know, one degree of separation from Doctor Who. You know, it's like, if they're an actor, they've either been in Doctor Who or have worked with someone who has, so.
Yeah, I'm jealous of England. You know, if I were an actor over there, I'd have been on this show already.
Exactly. Yeah, but I'm excited. You know, I think these 5 weeks are going to fly by all too quick, and then the wait until Christmas is going to be brutal, but I know it's going to be a fun ride. I can't wait for each new episode.
Yeah, they just, like, shot it out of the cannon with this one, so, like, we are off, and, like, it's going to be crazy.
Yeah, they definitely hit the ground running, so. Well, unless you have anything else to add, I think that we are about ready to wrap this up.
Yeah, I think that's about it.
All right, well, this has been episode 4 of Gallifrey Public Radio, and thank you for joining us, and we'll see you next week.
See you then.
thanks for joining us for Gallifrey Public Radio. Join us each week on iTunes or at gallifreypublicradio.podbean.com. Something you want to hear about or wish that we do differently? Leave us a comment on iTunes or send us an email at gallifreypublicradio@gmail.com or on Twitter at Gallifrey Radio. You can also find our hosts on Twitter at @model_Melissa or @scopehound. Music by Dan Doodly Doo and Kodoks.